This was followed by a further question by another nun concerning the difficulty of determining whether the basic problem is physical or emotional, and do psychological tests have their value. She further posed the example of a postulant who had come to them, and 2 weeks later she was taken ill. They had given her a series of tests, physical in nature, and could discover nothing the matter. So they came to the conclusion that the problem was emotional. Now, Father Hardin's reply, well, there are a number of points of importance here. First of all, I wouldn't overstress the importance of a 1, 2, or 3 hour psychological examination. It may help. Part of my background is that I finished my graduate studies in psychology, and I spent 6 years with the Chicago Provincial in examining candidates for the order. I personally do not think it is very important to administer a psychological test. It doesn't matter really how well conceived the test may be or how inquisitive the questions may be. Long before admissions, we should learn from those who know, who have lived with the candidate, who know the person well, and not accept those with deep emotional problems. What you're posing here may have been a failure in the screening process. Secondly, although some enter the postulancy life without any difficulty, yet they should have some prior knowledge of what religious life will demand of them in communal living, so that they're not met with difficult options. Here again, this can be the unfinished homework on the part of the administrative committee. On the other hand, emotional problems can be latent, but don't be too hasty to conclude that a functional disorder exists because of a failure to find a physical basis. I have been in and out of hospitals too much and too often not to know that some physical problems are hard to diagnose. So, what do I recommend? One, there has to be greater concern in discovering possible emotional problems long before admission to the postulancy. Second, if a person seems to develop emotional problems after admission, give the person the benefit of the doubt that the problem is not emotional. When I was in the novitiate, I ended up in the hospital 1 month after entering, and it's a good thing they didn't give me a psychological test. I had been used to dealing with people on a number of levels, and the constraint of the novitiate, we had no postulancy, was traumatic. Emotional problems can be created by circumstances in which the person lives. There may be conflict between what the novitiate reads in the rule book and what he or she observes as the actual way of life. Now, this gave rise to a further question on the part of one of the brothers concerning early training and concerning what he thought was a problem that Father Hardin himself had evoked. In the early training, the postulant can observe possibly a contradiction in the rule and the life of the community as it is actually lived. So his question was, should we have the postulant exposed to to an active house for, say, one half of their postulancy, for, say, for one half of the 6 months, as against isolating them in a closed environment and then proceeding to another closed environment, the novitiate, and then going out or sending them out and having them shocked too much by what they see of following this training. And Father Hardin's reply, I'm not sure whether exposure to shocking situations is a wise thing to do. Because often when people in their young years are thus exposed to this sort of thing, they develop a cynical attitude and they say to themselves, I guess I was too naive. And instead of really developing a balanced perspective and being able to cope with the disedification after they have taken their vows, which they will certainly see among members of the community, they may develop a cynicism, which they may even hide from superiors, in which they will externally behave and comport themselves very religiously. But inside they say to themselves, it's not real. St. Ignatius warns against early exposure, and there is wisdom there, because it is one thing to be exposed to disedifying and even worse, scandalous conduct, which is not impossible. It's another thing to cope with that. And the very fact that a religious is young, untrained, unequipped, is unfair to cope with the misconduct of people of whom we expect good conduct. The person, him or herself, must be well grounded both in their religious understanding of what life is all about and from having struggled with themselves. A lot of people are scandalized at the misconduct of others because they have not sufficiently struggled with the misconduct in their own lives. It is remarkable how much less we are scandalized at how ill-behaved other people are once we have seriously, and this is a matter of years, struggled with our own fallen, sin-prone nature. I would say no. There will be enough exposure without planning it. So this was followed by a question from one of the nuns concerning the fact that problems seem to sometimes arise where the novice mistress has shown some sort of favoritism. There has been no corrective action, no public humiliation, and no punishment. And therefore, isn't it possible that there has been no true postulant training? And Father Hardin's reply, some novices and postulants are not sufficiently prepared to cope with problems in their own lives, and the disedification they meet in others by not being called to task or corrected or reprimanded and punished in their postulancy. The practice of giving some little humiliating sanction for misconduct goes back to the earliest centuries of religious life. Now, I'm not talking about fasting on bread and water for a month. But all we have to do is reread the Gospels and see how outspoken Christ could sometimes be. Not just to the scribes and Pharisees, but to his own disciples. What's the most atrocious name you could give a person? Well, I think it is to call him a devil. and Christ reserved that for Peter. Christ called Peter a devil because Peter stupidly told Christ he should not undergo his passion. Now, I suggest those in formation cultivate the habit of effective, though charitable, correction. Some people don't do it. Some people don't know how. It may be because there is favoritism between themselves and, say, at least some members of the community that they are to be training. It may also be that those in charge of the community don't know what to say, because there is such a thing as the gift of reprimand, where you don't crush the person, but point out what's wrong, and at the same time have the person seriously want to correct themselves. This followed another question from one of the nuns, saying, mustn't there be truly a desire for self-correction, and mustn't there be a true desire for conformity? And Father Hardin's reply, it is well to say, and I would agree, that the ideal form of correction or reprimand would be self-correction. Those in charge of formation, well, they may be understanding and kind and charitable, but they must have the holy fortitude to want to correct. And those being formed must want correction, otherwise all the external correction won't help. At most, they may externally conform in order to avoid being criticized. Yet among the works of charity, I know of none that is more practically important in the one who is in authority than to correct those under his or her care. This is one of the big problems in the United States today. This is a serious problem with some of our bishops. There are five bishops that I pray for by name in every Mass I say. It is very difficult to risk losing, as they believe, someone's friendship or acceptance by calling the person's attention frankly and clearly to what's wrong. The combination of the administrative efficiency, this is the way you do it type of individual, the chairman of the board or the head of corporation approach, joined with the kindness, gentleness, and sweetness that those in charge of formation should have, is not easy to come by. Christ, of course, had it to perfection. This was followed by a further question saying, well, what about those who seem not to need correction? Does this mean that I have been remiss in some fashion, that I have missed a vital point here? And Father Hardin's reply, I would say that you have. Those in charge of formation must be perceptive and may be too ready to conclude that because some postulants are not as notorious in their attitude and actions as others, that they don't need correction. Indeed, they may even need more correction. Remember, correction in the prosaic sense of calling the person's attention to what they are doing wrong, or guidance in matters that are out of order, presumes that the person has sufficiently manifested himself or herself to you. We cannot rest satisfied with just the overt behavior of people. There is such a thing as correcting people on the basis of the information they furnish you about their interior life, their train of thought, their emotional reaction to things. In other words, the word correction, which is commonly associated with external behavior, I would say in religious life, is only the beginning. Indeed, very often, the correction may be misplaced, because what the person does may ostensibly be wrong, but the person's motive may have been good. This points up a great need that you must know those whom you are directing deep, deep down inside. That means extraordinary perception on your part and evoking from them enough self-revelation, and then you can call their attention to things that they should correct, and then the person must take over, because the one aspect of misconduct that can be most easily covered is our interior feelings and our interior failings, where nobody can see except God or the person himself or herself. How do you evoke self-revelation from the postulant? Well, the person must realize before being admitted that they must manifest themselves. They must realize that it is vital that they reveal themselves and that they be given the opportunity and the encouragement to do so. Never, never use compulsion, and do not use coercion. One of the most difficult problems, however, in religious life today is that the consciousness or the consciences of the various people under his direction are not known to their superiors. Hesitate admitting any person who is known as the clam type, because personality doesn't change that radically by becoming a religious. A prudent willingness to manifest oneself is a sign of a religious vocation. Otherwise, you will be directing people only from the outside. Real direction is on the inside. You've got to know what you are dealing with. You can't just see the body. You must see the soul. So this concludes Father Hardin's lecture and seminar on how to recognize a true religious vocation.